Welcome to A Lust for Life's new parenting podcast series. I'm your host, Ciara O'Connor Walsh. A Lust for Life is a mental health charity on a mission to educate and empower the children and young people of Ireland through early prevention mental health programmes, content and advocacy. And we also want to support the adults in our children and young people's lives, parents, teachers, guardians and friends, by giving you the tools that you need to be that one good adult in a child's life. And that is what this podcast is all about. So join us as we explore the joys and challenges and complexities of parenthood through compassionate conversations, interviews and real-life parenting stories. We're here to provide you with practical tips, support and resources to help you parent with a little more ease and to nurture both your child's and your own mental health. Thank you to Kitty and Mally for joining us this morning. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about a really important subject that we really don't hear that much about, infant mental health. So I'm just going to ask Mally, if you don't mind introducing yourself first and then Kitty, and then we're going to get stuck into it.
Hi, I'm Mally Coyne, Dr. Mally Coyne, and I'm a clinical psychologist who has worked in this area for many years in the HSC and outside, and really passionate about infant mental health.
Thanks, Mally. And Kitty?
So my name is Kitty. I am a list of things, but first and foremost, I'm a nurse. And then I went back and did my midwifery. I'm also a birth and postpartum doula and a lactation consultant. And the reason I found this interest in this area is in the way that I parent. It felt so right with little to no reading. And the more I sort of delved into it, the more I was like, oh my gosh. And that really carries through with the work that I do.
Thanks, Kitty. So Mally, can you confirm for us, what age are we talking about when we say infant? I always get confused. What's a baby? What's an infant? When do they become toddlers? What are we talking about?
I suppose when we're talking about infant mental health as such, and this kind of really rapid period of brain development, we're looking at ages 0 to 3, you know, and even within the, you know, when the mom is pregnant, you know, it's this kind of period of rapid brain development, which is very much in the context of the child-parent relationship. The baby learns all these things in terms of you know, it's the social and emotional development of the baby in the first 3 years of life, basically.
Okay, so what exactly are we talking about then when we talk about infant mental health?
I suppose for me, I don't know how long ago, maybe about 15 years ago when I was working as a HSC psychologist, I started to learn about the brain development of young infants. And this whole area, I mean, I suppose a revolution has taken place in our understanding of baby brains. I remember I watched back an interview I went on RTE Today a few years ago. I kind of orchestrated talking about infant mental health because I was so passionate about it. And we had just released these posters, Building a Happy Baby posters in Galway, that we now have in the maternity, you know, that big long kind of walkway as you leave the maternity department after having a baby. Those posters are up there, but it's all about evidence-based messages to do with infant mental health. So babies are hardwired to develop a social connection with their primary caregiver. It's usually their mom or their dad. And without this relationship, they simply would not survive. So in the first 3 years of life, there's different quotes about, you know, how much brain kind of development is going on. But up to 90% of the babies or of the child's brain develops in the first 3 years of life. Of course, there's always time. And we're always, you know, kind of, you know, up to adulthood, you're still, you know, building your brain. But the relationship between the child and the baby and their parent develops their brains. And it's within the sacred crucible of this most important first relationship, the parent-infant bond, that our sense of self and the world develops. It's kind of this idea of it's this idea of I am lovable because you see me as lovable. So if you're looking at secure attachment, you're looking at the availability of the parent to provide safety and security to the baby, attune to and respond to their needs, provide comfort when they're upset, share in joyful experiences, and enable them to feel special and begin to develop a positive sense of self. And when I talk about secure attachment, I'm talking about, I suppose, a third of the time is when the parent is tuning in and the child, they're all in tune with each other. A third of the time is rupture, when things aren't quite kind of attuned. And a third of the time is repair. So this repair is this kind of fertile ground upon which healthy brain pathways are formed, where then babies and children expect repair in future relationships. So I'm so passionate. Like, if there was one thing I am most passionate about in my whole career of psychology, it is infant mental health and perinatal mental health, because that is where the least investment goes in terms of money, resources. Things are better in Ireland now than they were 10 years ago. There's specialized teams and things like that forming. But the least investment goes into this area about supporting new parents, and yet the most brain development is occurring. So I welcome the work of Kitty. I welcome the work of anybody that works in this area to really kind of help. Because becoming a new parent, I found it so hard. Like, mine are 10 and 12 now, but I found it incredibly difficult. And I really have to, before I finish, kind of talk about, like, good enough parenting being the most important thing. So we're not talking about perfect parenting. We're talking about responding to your baby or infant's needs in a good enough way. And we're not trying to lay blame anywhere. But what I'm saying is, new parents need a lot of support. And we live in a culture now. There's other cultures where new parents are much more supported, you know, within their families. They come home with their baby and there's families and the community surrounding them. But now we live in a culture in Ireland, I suppose, that those connections are less there than ever. And when you think of COVID and how that impacted on this whole area, it was huge. So we all need to support one another to help build healthy babies and human beings. It is the, you know, at the end of the day, it is what they're going to become later on. So we have to start with infant mental health.
Okay. I mean, like, what you're saying is just rings so true, that you've got this window of opportunity to really lay these foundations for a child. And Kitty, I might bring you in here, because for me, the gulf exists where there aren't those supports for the human beings that are trying to keep this baby alive, you know, look after the baby, do all the things that come with the, like, incredibly steep learning curve of having a new baby without that intergenerational support that so many other cultures and times had. So what is the intersection between infant mental health then and perinatal mental health? And what does that look like in practice as you work with new parents every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's so huge. It's really, it's significant, but it's also multidimensional. And I think, like, that primary concept of what you touched on there, we're not really meant to be doing it on our own, paired with the fact that we have so many huge influences now. I love social media. Social media is a huge part of my life and my work, but we also are exposed to so many ideas and images and these, like, perfect homes and perfect meal ideas and these perfectly well-behaved children and all of these other things that we should be doing, on top of the fact that the majority of us are, you know, trying to keep ourselves alive, our children's alive. We're trying to keep our home going in somewhat decent state. Mine is certainly not most of the time, because you can't do all of the things. And I think when we talk about community, or, you know, inter sort of generational support and lack thereof, we are then left where we have essentially been, you know. I want to touch on kind of support and education in pregnancy itself at some point, but we're sort of handed this sweet newborn baby and told, okay, see you later, off you go. And we haven't been given any real support or education around what it looks like to step into, you know, this term matrescence, to step into motherhood in a way that feels held, in a way that feels held in both the emotional sort of support, you know, hey, you're doing a good job, you are the expert on your baby, and let's figure this out together, maybe, or it's okay to make mistakes, let's see what feels good, or the practical aspect of it, which is like, okay, what can I take off your plate? What tabs can I remove in your mind of the things that you need to be doing so that you can see the importance of and lay that time aside to create that foundational attachment, to just zone in on your little one and figure out what they're trying to say to you, and that you can, you know, read their early cues and respond to them appropriately without thinking, oh my gosh, I've got visitors over and I need to be like looking a certain kind of way, or I should be like out in a Evoca having coffee with my friends with my fancy buggy, you know, getting back to like this sort of, you know, ping back culture where, you know, you're looking great, you don't look like you've had a baby, but you're also doing all of the things. And that's really scary to think that there are so many babies born every day where mothers and parents are expected to jump into this, and that's how it looks. It's terrifying. It's really scary. And it's so, so interlinked.
What's interesting there is what you're describing as the normal experience. Normal. I'm going to retract my use of the word normal. A good experience, I'll say, because then add on top of that a layer of struggling with perinatal or postpartum depression and what that looks like, to be able to struggle to do the small things, actually just keeping up with the day-to-day life tasks being really challenging, and how that's going to have a huge impact. When you're just talking there about all the jobs that you need to do, I remember with my first baby sitting on the couch and him asleep on my chest, and me just looking under the telly at all the dirt and crap that had built up and just rubbish on the floor, and not being able to just sit there and enjoy this precious moment with like tiny baby. Because I was like, you know, like you said, my auntie is calling over later to see the baby and look at the state of the house, and I'm going to look like a failure. And actually what I was doing was the best thing I could have possibly been doing for my baby in that moment, is just being there in that skin to skin connection and allowing the newborn to feel held and supported and allowing myself just to rest.
Yeah, I remember feeling that. I remember being in a car heading to get a new buggy or something for my first baby, and looking down at her and going, like, she was only a few weeks old, I don't know how much longer I can do this. As in, not that I didn't want to be a mom, but I was so exhausted. And those first few weeks and first few months are so hard. And it's hard to even, like, I'd love to go back now, mine are 10 and 12, to those. Well, I don't know if I want to go back to those times, but I wish I don't know how present I was some of the time, because I just found it so difficult to go from, like, you know, working 9 to 5, 5 days a week, suddenly, you know, becoming a parent, becoming a mom, and all this responsibility on my shoulders, and feeling like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do another sleepless night. I don't know, you know, this whole pressure then about breastfeeding versus bottle feeding, and there's constant different messages going on. We try to do everything perfectly in life. You know, whether it be our job, whether it be this or that, there is this expectation. And so therefore, parenthood has taken on that expectation. But really, we need to just literally go F off to those kind of expectations, because it's not realistic. You're trying to adapt to this new situation without sleep. You're probably fighting with your partner. You're completely overwhelmed. And you just need support and understanding, and it's okay. I struggle as a parent every day. What I love is that whole, for me, Circle of Security, which is this parenting program I ran for parents, but I learned so much during that training myself, was hugely invaluable in terms of understanding that attachment between the baby and their parent. And I suppose it's a map of attachment that talks about the baby either. The parent plays the role of secure base, and the baby goes out to explore their world. And what they need from their parent is to watch over them, help them, enjoy with them, delight in them. That word delight is so important. this idea of delighting in your baby and not delighting in them all the time. You're not able to, right? Do you know what I mean? But it's like, you're so, you know, using that voice, and it's about using the everyday opportunities with the baby. So when you're changing their nappy, when you're feeding them, it's about using those everyday interactions, you know, of little bits of playfulness to look at them in the eyes and to do that serve and return interaction. It's like a tennis game. It's serve, you return, I serve. You are building their brain that way. So it's not like we're saying you have to play with your baby for an hour at this time of the day. It's like that whole using those everyday opportunities. And that's why the phone worries me, because I feel like the phone, when there are maybe those opportunities, the phone then has become this thing that has, you know, and I'm not trying to make people feel guilty about it, but it's really important for a baby to have face-to-face interaction. And then just to finish on the circle of security, they then come back into the safe haven of their parent, needing protection, comfort, delight, and to organize their feelings. So this whole idea of, I am a baby. I love this book. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's called You Are My World by Amy Hatkoff, How a Parent's Love Shapes a Baby's Mind. And one of the most like heart-wrenching quotes, there's quotes like, your love melts my fear. I mean, just the most gorgeous. When you smile at me, I learn that I am lovable. When I am crying, I hope you will come. I don't know how to make it better by myself. And actually, like, I do a one-day lecture on infant mental health every year for the doctoral students in Galway. Apparently, about a quarter of parents, there's a study done, believe that their baby should have some type of emotional regulation at a very young age, you know, at a baby stage in the first. But in fact, their brain tools don't have the ability for that. So that is why it is important for us to understand as parents that we play a role in organizing their feelings, in helping them to understand, in reflecting those feelings. But it's hard to do that when we're overwhelmed ourselves. And that is where the support for the parent comes in.
Kitty, what does that look like in practice for you when you're out with parents? Like, how can you, or what kind of advice do you give to parents when they're looking to find out, how can I best support my baby at this time and build that connection and that attachment and that bond that's so critical to the baby feeling safe?
I mean, I think so much of it is, dare I say, like, unlearning. We are still very much in this place where, like, it would not be uncommon for me to hear, oh, you know, my mother said I need to put down the baby whenever, you know, I'm not feeding them or changing their nappy because I'm going to build a rod for my back, or because they are manipulating me in some way. And so when I come into a space and I, A, don't go straight to the baby, I go straight to the mum, you know, it's actually very rare in all of the roles that I do, whether that is in lactation support and in birth support, even for me to actually touch the baby. Because what I'm doing is I'm reinforcing the power of the mother's touch, the parent's touch, and their interaction. I make a comment on, look at the way that you're looking at each other, or, you know, look at how clearly in tune you are with your baby. How beautiful is that? Or the way I can see the way you're smiling at her or him. And I think that, and then just saying something like a general comment of like, yeah, that's the real work you're doing there. That is what's most important right now. And even just saying that, it makes them go, oh, okay. And then, you know, saying how important it is, you know, that all of those beautiful neural connections are being formed and these neural pathways or these synapses and the activity that's going on there with the action of what you're doing, of just holding your baby close and, you know, watching what they're communicating with you and responding to that. Parents go, oh, right, okay. So everything that I've read in those books, it's, you know, this idea, actually, everything else is less important right now. And if I'm able to support that by working around that, and I think that happens from really early on, you know, in pregnancy, we're sort of very quickly disempowered. It's, you know, well, we couldn't possibly trust our own bodies with what we're doing, so we have to go to a doctor. And then when it comes to birth, that beautiful natural process, which yes, sometimes does need medical intervention, has so much taken away from us that oftentimes the first person to touch our babies isn't the parent. And it's a doctor, it's some gloved hands. A lot of us aren't supported in having that sort of golden hour or hours, ideally, where we are skin to skin, getting to know our baby. Our bodies are so cleverly made that it's like, okay. And then we're handed these little ones and told, okay, off you go now, all is well, see you later. How on earth are we meant to feel connected, attached, empowered, you know, ready to trust our own abilities as new parents when we haven't been given the opportunity to trust ourselves anywhere along that process? So I suppose to come back to your question with a little bit more clarity, where I sit in terms of the postpartum support that I do is I very much like to think of myself as reinforcing that bond.
Mali, can you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned attachment. What is attachment theory, and like where does it come in, and how can parents use attachment theory to help tool themselves up to form those early bonds?
Attachment theory is a theory devised by Bowlby in the 60s, and he believed that the primary caregiver acts as a prototype for future relationships via what's called the internal working model, which is a framework for understanding the world, the self, and others. So in other words, how the quality of the interaction between the parent and the child or baby is going to set the tone for all future relationships. And not only all future relationships, but for virtually every aspect of human development. So like, it's massive. And like, I've done training on infant mental health where, you know, you look at people, you look at little babies in orphanages and who aren't getting that kind of, you know, reciprocity, that need for interaction. And literally your whole being just shuts down when you don't. So babies don't just need food and water and sleep and all of that. They need relationship. Relationship is the foundation of everything. The first quote of my book is, the most powerful mental health intervention known to mankind is the child-parent relationship by Bessel van der Kolk. But I suppose one of the things that we did in trying to promote this kind of healthy attachments was this Building a Happy Baby poster project many years ago, where Kitty talked about a number of myths that exist around the child-parent relationship. And I'll kind of go through some of them. One of them is like, it's important to get babies into a routine earlier as that makes your life easier, right? And then the truth about it is new babies are not capable of learning a routine. Responding to their needs makes them feel secure. So keeping your baby close to you so you can learn how to meet their needs and read their signals for hunger and comfort. So this is one of the posters. Another one is, the myth is babies need lots of toys to help keep them busy and help them learn. And the truth is, looking at your face is the best way for babies to learn. Talking, listening, and smiling helps your baby's brain to grow. So it's all about holding, smiling, and talking to your baby. And another one is, babies become spoiled and demanding if they are given too much attention. The truth is, when babies' needs for love and comfort are met, they will be calmer and grow up to be more confident. New babies have a strong need to be close to their parents. This helps them feel secure and loved, like they matter in the world, literally. Like even with my 10-year-old now, and she's really upset, it's the bonding hormone, it's oxytocin. When a baby is in distress, they release cortisol, which is the kind of stress hormone, but they also release oxytocin, which is this need to be close to the parent. And then lastly, another myth is, you should leave babies alone so they learn to be independent. The truth is, babies left alone think they have been abandoned, so become more clingy and insecure when you're around. And the actual message behind the poster is, holding a baby when they cry helps them grow into a confident and trusting toddler. I actually ran a baby bonding group a few years ago in Galway. And I love the whole idea of baby bonding. There's a very simple method, and it's based on this idea of reflective functioning, which is all related to attachment theory, which is how the parent is able to reflect on themselves and the baby. Do you know? So it's kind of like the reflection of themselves and how the baby might be feeling. So it's the head, heart, hand technique. And we've actually incorporated this in a big way in the Lust for Life Junior and Senior Infants program, which we've just finished writing. It was just such a joy to do this and put loads of attachment theory into what little five-year-olds and their parents are going to be learning all around Ireland come September. And this is what we do. The baby bonding program is like a 10-week program where we bring in new parents and we sit on the ground and it's exactly what Kitty is mentioning there. It's exactly about observing the parent with their baby and really reinforcing, oh, look, your baby's looking at you there. Oh, that's such a lovely little moment there. And you're kind of, it's all based on very much supporting what's going on rather than telling them what to do. Rather, it's really just looking at the interaction, and there's lots of playful things in there as well. And there's lots of learning about the brain. But the technique is the head, thinking about my child and wondering what he or she is thinking about, focusing just on them. I wonder what could be going on in their minds, having the headspace to think about your baby without too much distraction. That's head. Heart. Putting myself in my child's shoes or my baby's shoes and imagining how they feel. Guessing is good. Recognizing these thoughts as separate from our own. Okay. And then the hands, doing and saying things to let my baby know that I'm trying to understand them. An action, a word, a sound, a facial expression to let your child know that you really get it. And this, by the way, head, heart and hands technique works for a child of any age. And also we're using it in the A Lust for Life program to help develop, to really further focus on kind of the empathy between children and how can you show another child that you're really trying to get inside their shoes and thinking about how they're thinking and feeling. So it's just a lovely technique devised by Debbie Maskell Graham from this baby bonding. And it's beautiful.
Amazing. And one tool that somebody taught me that has come in handy more than I think any other tool I have in my parenting toolkit is something she said was like, if you just want to like make your child feel heard, just tutting and clucking does an awful lot of work. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, just, just making these noises, just like a grandmother would be like, but you don't have to put words on it. Sometimes you can just.
Exactly, Kira. And I guess we also need to think about the parents out there, okay, for whom the tutting and clucking didn't happen, for whom this empathy may not have happened. And when it hasn't happened, that's where shark music comes in. So this whole idea of circle of security, it's the echoes of your childhood wounds. It is very difficult. It can even feel threatening for a parent to show their baby, you know, to kind of attune to their needs when their own needs weren't attuned to. Yeah. We only learn to soothe from hundreds and hundreds of instances of being soothed by someone else. Now, that's not to say we can't earn security. We've had an insecure attachment with one of our parents. We can't earn that and learn that in later in life. Of course you can. This is not out of the bounds for anyone. But for anybody out there who finds it difficult to look at your baby in the eyes and to really kind of be able to kind of sit there with their distress. That's why the circle of security is so brilliant in describing going out of the circle to explore your world or coming back in. For some parents, it's really hard to let their baby climb the climbing frame or to move away from them. And for another parent, it's really hard when the baby's crying or with rage or whatever's, you know, and they feel very threatened. So there's parts of that can be really hard. And so what I'm, you know, if you have your own kind of traumas from childhood and relationships or things like that, what I would suggest is you're not alone. It's very difficult to attune to what your child might be feeling or thinking if you haven't had that attunement when you were younger. So it's like what might you need in supporting you with that? It could be like, you know, what Kitty does. It could be, you know, it could be getting your own personal counseling I remember writing this in my book, like for me, parenting has been like the biggest you better get your shit sorted out, Mally. Do you know what I mean? Because you got a lot of skeletons in your wardrobe and they're coming out in those moments of distress. There's moments I feel really like I'm still doing therapy at the moment. I had an EMDR session yesterday and I talked about the guilt that I feel for, like, and I'm going to get upset here, but with my little, like, my second baby, you know, I felt like very overwhelmed. And I shouted at her and I can relate that exact memory to something that was done when I was younger. Do you know what I mean? You know, the busy swimming pool, the really hot environment. You're trying to dress. You've got two babies with you. It's really stressful. And it's like, you know, when you shout, but it's from the depth of it's this wounded kind of place. And that's why I still go to therapy. I have a really good relationship, thankfully, with my 10-year-old. But I am thinking of sitting with her and kind of saying, do you remember that time at the pool? Now, I feel really guilty about lots of moments, do you know? And I think I really just want to demystify that. This happens. And if you need help, get some help. And there's no shame in it. Okay, there's no shame. I've learned this for years and years and years, and I bloody struggled really badly. But there's always room for repair, and it's okay. And that's what I want to say to any parent out there, that it's shit hard. And that's why my book is called Love In, Love Out. It's during those moments where you're trying to give them a bath or shower and they're screaming and you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And your childhood wounds are just flooding in. And you're just like, you feel suffocated. That's where the tut, 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 tut comes in. That's where the breathing in and out. That's where you don't have to say anything. Regulate yourself. It's the space between, it's the moment, the space between stimulus and response. How can I self-regulate myself in this shit hard parenting moment so that I can then respond to my baby's needs? Mm. That's reflective functioning. And that's where self-care and self-compassion come in. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, and thank you for sharing that, Mally. It is, because I think we've all had those moments and we all look back and go, well, that was not my best and finest hour in parenting. I have certainly, and even as you were talking there, I was feeling guilty as you were describing, you know, the importance of, you know, spending this time, these beautiful moments with your baby and looking at you were talking about the baby bonding workshop. I, in my head, was feeling guilty about, I didn't do a good enough job with that. I didn't do a good enough job with that. How can I make up for that?
Both of you. I think that moment right there says, like, the fact that you both felt such deep emotion and even talking about that and remembering and reminiscing on those moments tells me, who in that moment, for some reason, have not been triggered, that all I see is two great parents. And I think, you know, yes, that repair is an opportunity to literally rewire how our children think about themselves moving forward. So, and that can be, I mean, there's no timeline on repair. You can have those conversations like that with your 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I think that is also, you know, all of this hard work is, in a sense, an opportunity for us to undo or create a new normal moving forward for this sort of unraveling of this intergenerational trauma. And I think that's when you think about it that way, it's like, woof, of course it feels rough. Of course it feels hard. Oh my gosh.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Like, I know that I connect with people through my vulnerability and I don't mind doing that, because I think it's really important for professionals in this field to show vulnerability and to show that you can have a shit hard parenting day. Of course, you're not trying to take away from what they need and the support that they need. But another point I wanted to bring was this whole expectations around, like, don't sleep with your baby or don't do this, don't do that. And, like, in a way, like, it's only now, like, I actually sleep in the bottom bunk with my daughter at the moment. Like, she's in the top bunk for various reasons. But, like, I love being close to her. And I wish that years ago when she was a baby, I would have just kind of taken that whole kind of expectation out of my head, like, oh God, they need to be in a room on their own by the time. Like, imagine, none of us as adults, a lot of us as adults don't sleep in a room on our own. We sleep in a room with someone else. And I'm not saying you're wrong if your baby's sleeping on their own, you know, whatever. But I'm just saying it's really, you feel like every stage is going to go on forever. And you have all these like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this and you should be doing that. And there, you know, it's just constant shoulds and should nots that it's like, F that, screw all of that. And like what I'm saying is if I were to talk to myself as a new mom, I would say, Mally, forget about it. It doesn't matter if she, you know, it doesn't matter if, like, we just had a period there for a few weeks where Amy was finding it really difficult to go to sleep at night because, you know, she was imagining monsters and this, that and the other. But and it is really difficult because then you're like, oh, my God. And then my husband's like, you wrote a book on this. You should know how to deal with this. And I'm like, but I don't because she's my daughter. But it's like everything is a stage and you get through it. But as long as the main thing in that is compassion for the baby, compassion for yourself, you're trying your best, you're attuning. I talk about like a good enough parent. There's three basic things. It's learning to trust your gut instinct, exactly what Kitty talked about. What is your gut telling you? And my gut told me when I was having my second baby that I didn't want visitors coming into the hospital, just my husband and my eldest daughter, who was only less than two. I didn't want other people holding my baby. I know it's hard probably for new parents to know what is my gut instinct because I've never done this before. But really, you're, as Kitty said, your baby wants you more than anybody in the world. And there is nobody in the world that can read your baby's signals the way you can. It is a biological destiny. Like, I have worked with kids who've gone into care and who've been in the worst environments with their parents, but they still want to go home and be with their parents. Do you know what I mean? There's this pull that pulls us towards our biological parents. And so I think parents don't realize how much that biology is there and how little you can do, you know, to make use of those everyday opportunities for head, heart and hands to build your baby's brain in a healthy way.
There's a great essay that I read just before I had my second baby, and it was called the Lemon Clot Essay. And it was just a woman basically asking questions about, do you really want to stand up from the couch and let your father's parents see that you've bled through, possibly, that you're leaking, that you have a lemon-sized clot that you're about to pass? Like, that is the reality of postpartum. And the idea that you would open your home and flood it in with visitors and be Instagram ready, it's just wild. You know, you wouldn't expect anybody recovering from, you know, a surgery or, you know, going through any other big, you know, physical event in their lives to be ready to like meet and greet their audience, you know, just straight away.
And that's what I say, put your foot down. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Put your foot down and just say, no, this is what I want. You know, whoever can meet my baby when I'm ready, but I'm not ready to present myself to the world. It's sacred. It's like the sacred space. And it is okay to maintain your sacred space. You do not have to answer to anybody. You really don't, because you're learning about this new human being in your life. You're both learning. So you have to give it space to learn.
And Kitty was my doula for my second child, actually. And that's how we know each other. But Kitty, you gave me permission for the first time to really say, and you even gave me lines I could say to people. And sometimes you do need to do that almost like social scripting with people, because we do not know how to say no to people. And that's why your work is so important, and the work that you do as well, Mally, is so important. So it's 11 o'clock. I just realized we have had you for an hour, but I do want to finish with a little thought experiment, if that's okay. So I want you both to just project 10 years into the future and imagine that all of a sudden the government has decided to put a huge emphasis on infant mental health and create wraparound systems of support and really invest in nurturing infant mental health. what would that look like on a systems level, on a society level? What would be created? Imagine you are now the chief advisor to the government and they said, we have an infinite pot of European money that we're going to spend on infant mental health. What should we do?
I have so many ideas for that. For me, it starts way ahead of before we meet our babies. And I think that, like, stepping into trusting ourselves is massive. And then I think that, you know, if we were to even, like, have, I don't like to think of, you know, hospital-based doulas specifically, but someone outside of that system whose primary role is to be there for you so that you feel educated, supported, empowered, and held as you step into this new role, so that you, as a new parent, can feel like, okay, I felt empowered in my pregnancy, in trusting myself and knowing what was right for me. And I now, in meeting this little person, can feel that same sense of feeling supported and empowered. And whether that is the same person, so you have that lovely continuity of care, you know, the same face, the same, that sort of relationship has been built up, or it's someone who specializes in postpartum so that they can do the other things. They can help to reinforce that bonding, that connection that you're doing now, while feeding you, nourishing you so you can nourish your baby, picking up the house so you don't have to do that. Maybe it's giving you time so that you can shower and collect yourself and take a moment and, you know, maybe do a meditation or read a chapter of your book or do the things that helped you feel regulated and like you, so that you can be a better parent for your new baby. So I think that early intervention is massive. And I suppose that integrated care, understanding that link between perinatal and infant mental health, encourages that early intervention. So like that, these new perinatal mental health teams who, you know, a lot of the bigger hospitals we have access to for an extended period of time after our baby is born. So we're not only picking up on these mamas who need more support, who've maybe struggled with their mental health pre-conceiving or struggling in their pregnancies, but we are giving them an opportunity for that support postnatally as well. So we are getting that early intervention opportunity in. And that's really going to be where we're promoting healthier development outcomes and changing that next generation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge question, really. Like, when I was part of the Children and Young People Services Committee, the early years section of that. And one of the things we were really trying to promote there was, like, I would love to see reflective antenatal classes. So I know that they have tried to do them in Ballymun. There are some, like the Irish Association of Infant Mental Health is a great resource. The Psychological Society of Ireland have their own perinatal and infant mental health kind of section there. And obviously these teams have started to grow, not all kind of fully resourced, but I'd love to see reflective antenatal classes where, you know, how you go into your antenatal classes and you get like input from a nurse and from a physio. Why don't we have input from somebody to talk about the baby brain? Like, why aren't we talking about, you know, why don't parents know that 90% of the brain develops, that there's a million neurons firing for every second for a baby, like, you know, and how and that relationships build brains, and how we can create these everyday opportunities to promote a secure attachment. Those are the things that we should be learning during these reflective antenatal classes. So I think I'd love to see a place where there's, like, you know, community-based workshops for parents, and also places where a new parent can go, whether that be online or an actual physical place, that they can just kind of go, I'm struggling here, or I have a question about such and such, and just that be an unshamed thing, that you're getting kind of continued support other than just the, you know, the visit from the public health nurse, which is invaluable, obviously. But like, people, what parents have to do now is they have to go privately to get support, because the public system doesn't provide them support unless maybe they come in looking for, you know, help around postnatal depression, which I know we haven't really touched on very much, but that can have a huge impact. I love the idea of networking mothers. We have this in Galway where, like, babies of the born in the same month, the mothers start to network outside of that and they meet each other, like, for coffee every month. And so there's lots of, like, community-based, you know, like a drop-in center, as I said, peer support leaders. The work that Kitty's doing is incredible. I'd love to see baby bonding rolled out for new parents as well. You know, that just be something that's just universal. That's not just based on somebody being able to pay for it. Yeah. So I guess we just need to support new parents to become new parents. And one thing that we did do actually in Galway during COVID, and it's mad how we were all able to mobilize during COVID, and suddenly, like, that has kind of, that's not, the need isn't as much there. And I had been piping on in my department about infant mental health for like 10 years and almost like annoying people with how much I was shouting from the rooftops about it. But then during the pandemic, thankfully, we developed this perinatal callback service, which the public health nurses asked for the psychology department. And what we did was we would get referred a parent who was maybe struggling a little bit, and we would offer them, a psychologist would offer them up to 3 calls after they've had their baby. And that was a huge support to a new parent, you know, to be able to talk to like a professional about what was going on for them and getting that little bit of more in-depth support over a phone call. And I'd love to see that. I'd love, like, I worked in primary care psychology for 15 years, and we really worked with children from 3 to 18 mostly because of the lack of resources. What about the 0 to 3? Why aren't we getting referrals for 1-year-olds other than, you know, does my child have autism, which obviously is very important, or a developmental delay? We need to be getting referrals of new parents and supporting them in the primary care services. This is a multidisciplinary approach. If we're talking about building human beings, you know, in terms of virtually every aspect. So, like, this is a quote by Freyberg, 1980. Today, we are in possession of a vast scientific treasure, a treasure that should be returned to babies and their families as a gift from science. The gift from science is what we're talking about. It's infant mental health. It is supporting new parents. We know this information now. So let's keep doing something about it.
Brilliant. Well, what the common thread there is support and people, like human beings that are going to show up for these new families and, you know, new parents, to be able to give them time, reinforce what they already know how to do, and support them. So, you know, I think that's what's missing, and that's what we really need to invest in. And I think for anybody listening who is friends with, or their sister or whatever is, you know, expecting a baby, really, like, that is the kind of support that you can show up with. Not just showing up to hold the baby or, you know, mind the baby. Show up to do the other things and let your friend or sister or whoever it is, parent, let them be with the baby and hold them in that space and allow them to have the time to do that.
Absolutely. And please don't be afraid for any parent out there who's struggling with their mental health or struggling with having a baby, just to ask for the help. You know, go to your GP, talk to them, talk to your public health nurse, talk to whoever you're comfortable talking to. It is okay. Your child will not be taken away from you. It is of such importance that, you know, that babies are with their parents and that we support parents. And they do say that if there's, you know, other important caregivers, if you kind of have depression for a while and it's really difficult for you, there are other caregivers, like the father, like, other, you know, possibly, you know, whoever is in your life that plays a protective role. So, yeah. Like, hugely important. So it's about building that community.
Absolutely. Well, Kitty and Mally, thank you so much for your time today. That was such an interesting conversation. And, you know, Mally, you talk about good enough parenting. I sometimes like to think of it as human being parenting, because none of us are perfect. We're all just human beings trying to do our best. And, you know, there's no such thing as perfect, but I love the idea that there's always room for repair. So anybody who's listening to this and is having those feelings of like, oh my God, you know, and one of the people on our team that I said to, we're going to do this episode on infant mental health. And she said, oh God, what about the people who didn't maybe get it right? And I just said, that's exactly, you know, what we want to leave people with is that there's no real getting it right. It's just
no, and by the way, resilience is about a baby and a child being encountered with difficult situations with a soothing presence by their side. So we're not trying to take away all pain for children. We're trying to support them through these situations and repairing so that they learn that life is difficult, but when we connect with one another, it makes it better.
Thank you very much to you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to all our listeners for joining us for this parenting podcast at A Lust for Life. We are committed to providing free, valuable resources and support to children and young people and families like yours, but we can't do it alone. If you found our podcast helpful and informative, please consider supporting our work by making a donation. To donate or learn more about our school's programs or campaigns, visit alustforlife.ie. Every donation, no matter how small, helps us reach more children with our early intervention programs in schools. Join us on the journey to change the face of mental health in Ireland. Thanks for listening.